Michigan Hockey Cast 6.20, where we're waiting on the deed to Mariucci any day now. I think they call these housekeeping notes, and not about like dusting or vacuuming, but things that we must talk about at the beginning to get off of the news pile and into ears. First thing is we did a watch along for the semifinal. It went, I think, pretty well. It did at least for Michigan, which we will transition into talking to in a bit. And there is rumor that we're trying to do one again for this Saturday. It is on pause because the babysitting market in Ann Arbor is at an all-time low, apparently.
I don't know about that.
You don't know that it is?
I spoke to insiders, and they were...
You have babysitter insiders.
They were saying that it wouldn't be that hard to find.
See, now that's kind of what I think. Isn't it spring break?
You just have to look in the right channels.
Isn't it spring break or something?
It's spring break starts on Friday.
Right, so there will be people available.
You would think so.
All right. So if you know of someone who is a babysitter, a good babysitter, who has a clean record, I think we probably need one of those.
Mediocre babysitter.
Get a hold of Brian. And if you can't, you know, we can pass the message along. Sometimes he's hard to get a hold of. All right. And then you will have yourselves another watch along. That is housekeeping note one and two. You mentioned some NHL stuff. You had a couple of ideas that we could talk about because there's also been a request to have NHL talk on MGO, at least for the foreseeable future. You will get that, I suppose, off and on for the next month or so. We'll see how long Michigan hockey sticks around. But, okay, you had said last week to me off air that you had some Wings takes rants that it feels like you need to get off your chest.
Yeah, I mean, the big one is that this has been very bad the last...
bad. Thanks, Alex.
2.5 weeks, roughly.
Well, there was a losing streak.
There was a losing streak.
And then there was a fight.
Duration of, I believe, 6 games. Then they had a fight in practice in there, and then they beat Buffalo on Saturday.
Who has been better?
Yeah.
Since the trade deadline.
Yeah, they played well. Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen has been really, really good.
Can you say that 3 times fast?
Sure.
Go.
No, I'm not doing it right now.
Oh.
But,
oh, man, I thought I had you on.
So they win that one, and then just going into Sunday, and it's like, okay, they got Pittsburgh, who on paper is a really good team, but they have not been at all this year, and since the deadline have been basically mailing it in every game.
Well, and they traded Gensel.
Right, but they've... since they've traded, he wasn't playing previously because he was injured. But
right.
Like their level of play has declined even more because they're just like, the season's over. We don't care.
Yeah, and trading him kind of signals that.
Yeah. And so then they play that one, and then they have Columbus is the next game. So going into Sunday, it was like, you know, bank 4 points here, and we're feeling pretty good, or at least the mojo's back, etc. And then the game against Pittsburgh was... basically right back to the losing streak sort of thing.
I saw that it was on. I followed the score slightly. What let them down?
Being outshot 17-4 in the first period, mostly.
Well, we've seen Michigan do that to teams.
They gave up the first goal, then they tied it, and then they gave up two more, and they were kind of buried by the end of that first period. They gave up a fourth goal, they got one back, then they gave up like a backbreaker, make it 5-2. And
so is it goaltending?
They scored one late. It's kind of everything.
Yeah.
So when they were on a major heater from January to February, I kept thinking about writing about the team, but I didn't really know what to say because I was so confused about what was going on.
As to why they were winning?
There had been, if you look at the numbers, they had a goal share at 5-on-5 of around 60% in those 2 months, with an expected goal share of around 43 or 44%.
So they just were shooting well.
If you look at the underlying numbers since the start of 2024, their expected goals clip at 5-on-5 is, I believe it's worse than the Sharks.
So they're not a good team.
It's really, really bad.
But
and the weirdest thing is, it was right around 48-49 in October, November. which I think is around where the team should be.
So they were average.
So they, when they were treading water in their results, they were treading water in the underlying numbers. Then for 2 months, they can't be beaten, and their numbers are...
horrendous.
Horrendous. And so I'm sitting there, I'm like, what do I write about this?
What does any of this mean?
I was watching these games, and I'm like trying to figure out, is there something here I'm missing? What's going on with this? And they did have some good games. I thought, you know, despite the bad underlying numbers, I thought they played some good games. I thought they had two really good periods against Edmonton in on the road. I thought they played a really nice game in the one you went to against Colorado, where I thought they hung in there and they battled hard.
They did play well in that game.
And so
they got good goaltending, but
right. Yeah. There were moments where it was sort of like, okay, they're putting more complete games. We'll see if they can kind of tick the numbers up a little bit.
Yeah.
And then what basically has unfolded over the last 8 games is what happens if you get 44% of the expected goals and then also go cold on a PDO aspect. And this is what it looks like.
PDO is shooting percentage plus save percentage.
Right.
So you're not making any shots, you're not keeping anything out of the net, and you're not creating anything.
If your PDO goes cold, you're going to look bad no matter what.
Right.
But if you go cold with a 44% expected goals
underneath, you might get buried.
It looks like this. It looks like getting outshot 40-20 and beaten 7-0. Like, that's what it looks like. And they had one of the top shooting percentages in the league for most of the year, which was a big story, and so you did kind of figure that. But the goaltending has really unraveled between Alex Lyon and James Reimer. I thought they should have picked somebody up at the deadline just to give them another option. But what's so funny about all this is that they've been through this just brutal stretch of play, and yet it's really not over for their abilities to make the playoffs. They are basically right in the thick of things with several other teams, including the Capitals, the Islanders, and the Flyers. I think Tampa's shored up their position decently.
Yeah, I think
I don't think they're going to fall out.
I think, and Tampa has a pedigree that you're like, all right, if you have to get 2 must-win games down the stretch, you're going to get A-plus efforts out of
basically all season, they got a really good effort out of Vasilevsky on Saturday night when he single-handedly beat the Panthers. They got outshot,
but that's
something like 40-6 in the final two-thirds of that game, and he won them the game.
And we've seen that from him over the years, that they have some players that can flip a switch.
He's a really good player when he's healthy. Like,
I mean, they kind of like
good, but he hasn't been all year. So
they're kind of in the point in their dynasty or their player lives, core life, where you just, they're toddle through times in the season, make sure you get the playoffs, and then everybody goes hard and you see how far you can get.
They have like major 2013 Red Wings kind of vibes, where it's like, this team isn't really good anymore, but you don't really want to see them in the playoffs because they still have some really good players.
You maybe don't mind seeing them in like round 3. Like, that's when you're like, eh, we'll see what they have left.
Well, but if you win the President's Trophy, right?
Yeah.
And you draw Tampa as like the first round. It's
that's...
I don't want that.
Pass.
Why can't I get the Capitals?
So Tampa's probably in. That means there's one more, and they're not going to catch Toronto, I would guess, right?
No, they're not.
So they're probably going to be one of the spots. So then you have one more spot left, and you mentioned the teams. The Flyers could get the 3 in the Metro. That also could go to Washington, the Islanders. It feels like Pittsburgh and Buffalo are still...
Pittsburgh's dead. New Jersey, I think, is now dead. They were getting a few better games from Jake Allen, but it's just...
Buffalo,
Here's the thing. Buffalo is 5 back of the Red Wings with the same number of games played. That's not an easy gap to make up.
No.
People think 5 points is easy, but in a league where you don't have to do that well to get loser points and things like that, it's hard to make up.
And the Islanders have a game in hand on them and a 4-point lead. The Capitals are up 4 with two games in hand. That's just a lot.
It's not
They'd have to mostly win out.
You would have to go something like 12-2.
So they basically have to be the Predators.
Yeah, or the final games.
Yeah.
And just squeak in.
So, and Philly...
Philly built up all this cushion. And that's been good for them because the cushion is evaporating as half their defense is injured or traded. And they've been going through a period where they're playing exclusively top-tier teams. They've got 5 more of those. And they've got to find ways to scratch out points in that period.
To me, it feels like how serious are the Islanders? Because if they play, if Sorokin figures some things out and they continue to score goals, I like their chances of getting either the third spot in the Metro or a wild card. If they don't, then, I mean, Detroit, I don't think has a poor chance. I'm not really buying Washington. I mean, I don't know, man. What are you going to sell me on Washington?
So Washington is my biggest argument for why Derek Lalonde needs to pack his stuff and find a new job.
The coach for the Wings.
Yes.
Okay.
Because you cannot tell me that that Washington team is a vastly more talented defensive team than the Detroit Red Wings. But you watch them, and they actually cover plays in the defensive zone. They have structure. They block shots. Like, that team is so bad, but they can keep some goals off the board and try and grimace their way.
Which is funny, because that was never their identity,
not
right?
Really, no.
Yeah.
I mean, they have the fourth fewest goals scored in the NHL behind, in front of only Chicago, Anaheim, and San Jose.
Who are teams that are actively trying to get Macklin celebrating.
They are minus 30 in goal differential, but they just grind out these, like...
Are they getting goaltending?
Yeah, Charlie Lindgren's a pretty good goalie.
So he's taken over for Kemper?
But they also check really well, yeah. And they just... They look well coached. This is a team that doesn't have a lot of talent, they don't have a lot of real players, but they're well coached. And it's the same thing with Philly. You look at that Philly lineup, especially since the trade deadline.
The problem with Philly is they might have sold too much.
Yeah, which I think... I mean,
which isn't the wrong move.
No, Danny Briere was waiting all year to do this.
Right, no, that's the right move. But what I'm saying is, like, you can't do that and then, like, think you're going to go on a playoff run. You're not going to trade, like, two of your defensemen and then be like, oh, well, we'll just... win around in the playoffs. Like, usually doesn't work like that.
So the thing with Washington is they still have maybe one of the three or four hardest schedules in the NHL.
Washington?
Yeah. And they have generally gotten bombed by great teams this year. They did manage to scratch out a game against Vancouver on Saturday night, but their next...
after a great icing call.
Yeah. But their next games after they play Calgary tonight are Leafs, Canes, Jets, Wings, Leafs, Bruins, Sabres, Penguins, Hurricanes, Sens, Wings, Sabres, Lightning, Bruins, Flyers.
That's a lot.
They don't get Chicago or Anaheim or San Jose. That's their problem in part.
Two of those teams aren't in their conference, and they just went on a West Coast trip, so they probably just got them.
Yeah. But a lot of these teams do play good teams, so it's just like a matter of who can scratch out points.
Who sucks less.
Against those teams. I mean, I actually like the Islanders the most in this mold. They've been cold a little bit recently, but they were kind of hot before that, so that's just kind of how it goes. But
I was sort of buying what you were saying, and then I watched some of the game against the Rangers, and they just got...
That was not good.
They got toasted, and I was like, ah, why do I talk myself into this?
You can watch all four of these teams and
come with the same conclusion.
Thoroughly dissatisfied with all four.
Like, you know what? There's only going to be seven teams in the playoffs this year. Like, we're not going to take one of these.
Canes, Rangers, the top three Atlantic, and maybe the Lightning are the teams. There's going to be two seriously stinky teams in the playoffs. Like, possibly the worst team to make the playoffs of the last 5-6 years is going to come out of this race.
Feels like you probably don't want to get the Islanders just because if they play Sorokin, you don't really know what's going to happen. Beyond that, a lot of the teams feel similar.
Yeah, I mean...
Do you want to do a quick draft on the West since we talked about these?
We can save that for next week.
Next week? Okay. All right. So stick around next week for our Western Conference playoff.
The only thing I'll say about this race is just it's watching four tortoises try and...
work up a reverse treadmill or... tortoises on a treadmill. That's what it is. That should be the name of our podcast.
It's just so sad.
Come on, guys. There's a big leaf of lettuce here for you.
You watch one of these four teams, it's the Mark Jackson, what happened to the game I love meme.
All right. That's some NHL updates for you. We will transition to Michigan's singular hockey game. Maybe their singular best hockey game?
Yeah.
They didn't score a lot, but, you know, I can't remember if we got into this on the actual show that we did on the watch along, but one of the things is that we've talked about is, you know, these are kind of games that you have to win. Like, you're not winning a bunch of tournament games in blowout fashion or in high scoring fashion. You have to sometimes play tough defensive goaltending games in order to continue to advance through the postseason. And, I mean, obviously, Michigan is in the early stages of the postseason, so this does qualify. But it was not a game that we've seen Michigan win a lot this year. I mean, it's not that they've lost a ton of them. Most of their games have generally been high scoring because of both goaltending and defense on both sides. But this was a really well-structured, coached, executed game. And when they had some chances, they took advantage of them.
Yeah, they played very, very well.
So the first thing of note, you know, Minnesota comes out and they are kind of on fire for a couple of minutes, and it looks like they're frustrated with the way that the last game ended, that they, you know, thought they had a comeback, and then Michigan kind of pulls it out. And so there's a little bit like, all right, we need to come out with some fire. And they did, having first few shots, getting chances, Michigan hemmed in their own zone for a couple minutes. But after that, Michigan kind of turned the tide. And the one thing that happened that we must note, we've been waiting for since the preview and maybe even last year's podcast, is Chase Pletsky's assist quest has officially ended.
He got an assist.
He threw a puck on net from the point, right? And it hits Close, who deflects it out about 8 feet away. Just a horrendous rebound.
So bad.
And Keenan Draper walks in, grabs the rebound, and beats him, and Michigan is up 1-0. I just kind of want to give him a shout-out. Like, this is... I said this on the podcast, the MGO podcast yesterday, where he hadn't had an assist since, like, January, I think it was 9th, 2021?
January 9th, 2021, yep.
That's a long... What were you... Were you still in school?
Yeah.
You were still in school.
We were doing this show. This was our first year. That was the COVID year.
We still had our name tags on.
That might honestly have been the night that we did that Michigan State game on the radio.
It was the last time.
I have to look that up.
when the event happened that we can't name?
The only thing you can say about him finally ending the assist quest is that it is a perfect encapsulation of how insane that stat was. Because it was an example of why it's really not that hard to get assists.
No.
Right? Like, what he does to get that assist is nothing. It's the whole reason why the assist quest was crazy. Because you really don't have to do much to get assists.
A secondary
evidenced
one, yeah.
By the one that ended the streak.
It's hard to play in 25 or 30 games and not get a single point.
It's as a forward.
I mean,
it's
even,
not easy as a defenseman.
But even the defenseman.
You do see defensemen in the NHL that, like, 70 games, 0 goals, 4 assists.
But it's still four.
Like, if you're a defenseman that's basically, I just chip the puck out and never touch it otherwise, that's one thing. But when you're a forward.
Yeah. Like, you're in the zone. You're going to have zone time at some point. And at some point, you're going to throw a puck on net that gets a favorable bounce and someone's going to be there.
You could just make one pass through the neutral zone and then the guy goes in and scores.
It's like what's the terminology in basketball box scores when you don't do an infinity or something, when you play and you literally don't. I mean, those are very hard to get. If you're in basketball and you're playing a game, you're going to turn it over. You're going to get a foul. Someone's going to hack you. You're going to get a free, something.
Yeah.
You're going to get a rebound because you're going to, even though you're scared of the ball's going to find you off the rim. Like, something is going to happen. And Chase Pletsky gets his point, gets his assist. And I think the bigger part of this is the first line to score in this game is the fourth line. And there's an argument that, you know, this was not the game that you would look at if you were, oh, this is, you know, top line dominance or hero line or, you know, the Nazer and Duke line or whatever. You know, the fourth line was as effective as anyone throughout this game.
Yeah. This is the kind of game that is really made for a fourth line to...
Like a grinder...
To flourish because it's...
Digging blue-collar line.
Tightly checked line. You're doing a lot of forechecking, all that kind of stuff. But they played with energy. They played with a lot of pace. There was one shift that I'm going to put in my column about... early second period where they got about a minute of zone time.
They did, yes.
And just really were able to keep winning those battles and cycling low to high and all that stuff. So it was a good game for them. They scored a goal and then they...
Well, they scored two goals because, like, that's the next sort of thing on this is that, on my list here, is that Pletsky almost gets another assist because he throws the puck from the point again down around the boards where... LaPointe grabs it and fires it out in front to a crashing Luca, and Luca beats the goalie. and are close, and so makes it 2-0. And, you know, we'd kind of, you know, talk about this in the watch along, but then you go from having no assists, having 2 in what, like 5 minutes, 5-8 minutes, something yep. like that. But this is, of course, the one that is waved off for offside that Brian called live on air, where
the broadcasters
looks like
were calling it live on air. Yeah.
Oh, well, I didn't have them in my ear as much as normal. So, the puck looks like it might come out, gets close to coming out.
It comes out by about 4 millimeters.
One of your hairs.
Yeah.
And then is thrown back in. It's also like, what, 30 seconds or so before the goal. And this kind of enters your point of like, yeah, I don't hate the challenging for offsides, because if it's a rule and
it has to be
momentarily
a statute of limitations on yes. how long you can do it, because it's a failed exit. It bounces off an unsuspecting player's skate and kicks right back in.
Right.
And it goes right to Keenan Draper, who goes in all alone and nearly scores.
Right.
And if he scores there, I got no problem with,
yeah,
that,
because
that, with that goal being
that goal
is a direct result
exactly.
of the missed call.
Yes.
But the goal that ended up being disallowed was, I believe, 45 seconds. I wrote it down, and I...
That's almost like 1/60th of the game.
It's ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. And, again, we should not use replay as a get-out-of-jail-free card
yeah.
for teams. And we should not reward psychotic video coaches that are just looking to sleuth pucks that got out by a millimeter as a way to overturn legitimate plays in the game. Like,
that's very articulate. I like that. A lot of verbiage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it goes back from 1-0, 2-0, now back to 1-0. And then the next note that I also have is that Draper hits the post. So this line has almost created 3 goals in under half of a period.
Yeah.
Early on. Halfway through the first period, the shots were 6-4 Minnesota. So Minnesota still was getting chances. It felt like to me in the first period, like their best opportunities after those first couple of minutes were on rushes. Like they would get up the, not necessarily odd man, but like they would get up the ice and get a chance. There'd be a save or something. And then that would be it. They weren't getting necessarily zone time. They weren't having cycles as you like to talk about. They just got their one and dones, and Barczewski said no, and Michigan would retrieve the puck, and they would be moving it back out the other way.
Yeah.
Which is, again, what we talked about at the very beginning of just well-executed defense structure and Michigan not getting beat on like puck chasing and that sort of a thing. Minnesota did get one really good look, I thought, in the second half of the first period. Pitlick got a chance from the slot that he pulled high and wide. Upon replay and looking at it, you could see that Truscott did a very good job of getting in front of him and like taking away a lot of the angles, so that his shot had to come off at a probably a sharper angle than he wanted, and that sort of forced it wide. So even though they did get a decent look, Truscott was in the right position there as well.
As a whole, defense in this game was just tremendous for Michigan. The
yes.
coverages, there's a play that I flagged. I don't remember which period it is. I think it was maybe the second period. But you have Oliver Moore making a cut to the back post. And Steve Holtz just boxes him out and presses him right out of the range. And then in the third, there's a stick by Seamus Casey to knock what was like probably going to be a goal coming from below the goal line into the slot. And he realizes it at the last second and pokes it away. And how many entries were denied with sticks at the blue line? How many plays were rubbed out on the wall? I mean, this is like I'm watching the like 2012 LA Kings. Like, what is this? Where did this come from?
Also, where has this been for like 6 months? They'd be a one seed. And you'd be... So 1-0 after one. The second period, Michigan... I mean, you know, Brian talked about this a lot in the watch along. Michigan just really dominated.
Yep.
You know, they do get their power play. There were only 2 power plays in this game, one for each team. Michigan gets theirs, and kind of at the wrong time. Brindley forces a turnover, gets hooked in the opponent's slot, and it just comes at the wrong time because, for whatever reason, we never really got confirmation as to why, but Rutger McGroarty was not on the bench. For some reason.
Some period of time. I mean, that can be anything. That
right.
Can
it could be like a broken skate or something.
Yeah, or you get, need, you know, something taped up on your ankle or your knee, or it could just be...
Maybe he had to go to the bathroom.
Bathroom, yeah.
Unfortunate as it be, because he was not then sitting at the right dot with Brindley at the left dot, so they kept trying to tee up Brindley and never
they
really
had the
got...
puck in the zone, like, the whole time.
All but, 2 minutes, yeah. Yeah.
But they just didn't really get any good looks.
No, and part of that does come, I think, from having a good shooter on both sides. And when you can go both ways...
Yeah, when they had the second unit on there, honestly, I just wanted them to keep teeing up Triscott point shots through tons of bodies.
Why?
Well, he has a rocket.
Okay.
He's got the best, like, pure bomb on the team.
Okay. Well, maybe. I just...
Would you rather, like, try and get Nick Moldenauer from the circle while the goalie's staring right at it? Or would you just say get 9 in front of the net and see if it works?
Yeah, I mean, there's something for that. I think the second unit to me is more of a... Not necessarily a distribution from the top, but it's when you try to go low to high. Or you try to go, like, you go boards to... behind the goal line and then into the slot or that kind of a look. I mean, they've run a couple of those plays and gotten goals off them that I didn't mind earlier on in the season.
Yeah.
The thing that I worry about with Truscott taking shots from the point is if he hits the first guy and the puck comes out, is he beating that guy to the puck or are you giving up a break? And that's,
sure.
That's in that situation when you're up a goal, that makes me a little nervous. But about halfway through the game, shots were 19-12 Michigan. And I think, if I remember correctly, after the first period, shots were 10-6 Minnesota. So Minnesota gets two shots in the first half of the second period. Michigan dominates the puck, completely outshooting them, controlling possession, getting chances. And then I didn't really have a lot of notes in the second half of that second period. Michigan just shut them down until...
There wasn't really any... Even in the third period, there isn't a lot to talk about. They get the goal at the end of the second, but this was a very sort of low event game. Michigan had a lot of zone time.
Which Michigan doesn't generally play a lot of.
Nope. Nope.
So you get this really nice play. Brindley ends up getting the goal, but the play is really made by Marshall Warren.
Yep.
Has a nice diagonal stretch pass from
Minnesota's
sort of,
in a bit of a change. He just snaps it tape to tape.
From his own left circle to Brindley going up the right boards.
Right in front of the blue line of the opponent.
Yep.
Good old two-line pass, and Brindley... Just
beats a guy and then beats close on a great shot. I mean, he puts that in the top left corner.
It's the encapsulation of why more goals are scored in the second period than the other two periods. You get the long change, and that's what defensemen should always be doing during a long change, is just looking up by seeing if there's somebody that's got a little bit of space and pushing play up for a quick counter, and Brindley scores it.
Well, and you get two things. You get the great pass by Warren, like that we were talking about, but then also, like, that's what speed does, is you get a guy like Brindley with a step on you and you're not catching him, and he does have a snipe in his arsenal and he just hit that corner. And
you know what his shooting percentage is this year?
It's high,
22%,
right? Yeah, I mean, he's probably on a
bit of a
heater, but
shooting percentage bender, but
I mean, like, he's gotten a lot of good looks. And you know, the thing with him is, like, so when you talk about shooting percentage, you're talking about goals versus shots on goal, right?
Yep.
So he misses the net a lot, like on those one-timers, right? On the power play and stuff. So I don't know. I mean, there's it's not like every shot that he takes is going in, but or attempt, I should say. So it's 2-0, and so you're entering the third. How good are you feeling?
I was okay because they just were really all over the Gophers.
Yeah.
Even though this has been the thing they can perpetually not do, especially against Minnesota, it was sort of like this team is playing like a different team mm-hmm. than they have played in the previous games. So
the only thing that gave me some pause is, like, literally the last game they were in this almost same position, up 3-0, basically shutting down, and then you just get a bunch of goofiness.
Yep.
And that's what it felt like. It didn't feel like Minnesota was going to come back. This was going to be Michigan gaffing it away. And if it happened, or they were going to shut it down and win the game. One of those two things. This was going to be more Michigan-dependent than Minnesota-dependent, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So in the third period, then, quickly, Edwards gets called for interference, which Brian seemed to not like the call. I was a little more okay with it. the puck seemed gone to me. Did you have an opinion on if
he
that was...
He passed it. It was a couple steps. It was like in the gray area between what is obviously interference and what is definitely just finishing a hit.
Yeah, and given the context of the game that Michigan had gotten one power play, Minnesota had gotten zero, they've swallowed all the whistles, this was a good chance to give them, and not at the end of the game. Because in those kinds of games, I think that in general... Maybe not Big Ten refs, but in general, refs aren't going to want to like give the one chance with like 3 minutes to go.
Yeah, I just didn't love this from Triscott in general because like he hit the guy pretty high.
Wasn't this Edwards?
Edwards, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really major caliber, but any time you go for a big open ice hit in this league,
yeah,
like, you're kind of asking for it. Like,
you're rolling the dice.
You're
for
putting
sure.
things on the line because you don't know if the guy's going to dip his head right before you hit him and what can happen. And just Michigan wasn't... dominating the game because they were beating Minnesota.
Pulverizing
yeah,
anyone.
Like yeah. Just, there was no real need for that.
Yeah. Well, and when you bring up the thought of a potential major, you know, being up 2-0 in the early part of a third,
yeah.
you're in a good situation.
Yeah.
The one thing that can derail you is a 5-minute penalty kill. But it's only two. And, you know, Minnesota didn't do much. They had the one chance that Jake made a really good save on, got his glove out. You know, on the replay, it looks like it might get post and out, but, you know, you don't know. And he makes a great save on a shot from straight away. But other than that, like, Michigan didn't give up really zone time
nope.
until about 50 seconds left in the power play. And that's just a continuation of, you know, their really good penalty kill over the last, well... 2 to 3 months now?
A couple months.
Yeah. And then after that, like, most of my notes are just, you know, Barczewski made one good save, and then you get about halfway through, and they kind of take a bad bounce, and there's a scramble around the net, and it looks like, oh God, here it comes, but nothing really happens, and so then you're getting down to it. And with, I think Minnesota goes empty at about a little over 2 minutes to go. We were sort of debating this on the watch along. You know, you're down two goals in this situation. Your season's on the line. You know, when do you pull down 2-0? It's not, and you made a good point of like, you know, it's not like you're dominating. So you might need to be a little more aggressive here because you're not just holding the zone the whole time.
Yeah, I always try to feel it out. With goalie pulls, the thing I don't like about pulling the goalie sometimes is just...
Like early?
Yeah, just the way that... I don't know, there's too many guys that I just am paranoid about that if you... That can hit the empty net
yeah.
from...
Like if you just turn it over.
175
It doesn't even
feet.
Have to get out.
Yeah, no, there's plenty of times you see that
yeah.
where puck pops free, defenseman gets on it, throws it down the ice, and it goes in. And so...
You're like, we didn't even do anything wrong.
Yeah, to me, if you've been hemming a team in and you're really all over them,
yeah.
I always just worry about pulling the empty net because, like, well, we already got them where we want them. We don't need
yeah.
that extra guy yet. But Minnesota needed it because they were doing
down
nothing.
Two, and they do pull them and they get the goal, and not even on a great chance. Like Snuggerud is open and he's sort of he's above the dot on the edge of the house, and he fires, and there's, you know, 2, 3, 4 guys in the way. Barczewski looks like he's caught maybe in the middle of the ice. And never really sees it. Puck kind of comes in from the side, sort of, from the point, and just sort of inside the post. And, you know, it's 2-1. You know, the air kind of went out a little bit there because it's more of an emotional letdown because you're like, oh, God, they pull the goalie and they can't get the empty netter. And then they get one back and you're like, we can't give this up. Not like you didn't like what Michigan did. Not like their defense got broken down. But it just seemed like, well, they got one, but... I'm not really mad about it. It's more like, just don't give up another one.
Yeah, it was not a great puck tracking moment for
Barczewski.
Yeah. He kind of lost it at the top and really had no idea where it was.
No.
Which is not great.
It's
not on him necessarily, but it is...
You got 7 or 8 guys.
You prefer him to be closer to where it is.
Yeah, that's true.
He had no idea where it was.
And of
he
course,
wasn't even over to the side of where it was.
It's on the stick of the one shooter they really have
yep.
in Snuggerud, and he hits it. But it's 2-1 then, and after that, nothing. I mean, they didn't really get a really great chance. I mean, they got the puck in the zone a little bit. Michigan doesn't get the empty netter. The puck bounces around and moves from side to side, but it's... There was no, like, oh, no, chance at the very end that has sometimes sort of gotten to them.
No, they locked it down pretty well at the end.
So you get a low event game, a defensive game, good goaltending, you know, okay enough special teams, not really overly relevant. And then you create enough chances and you're good enough, your good players take advantage of those chances and you win a game on the road at Mariucci in the Big Ten tournament for the third time in 3 years. I mean, that's, there's a lot there, I think.
They've gotten very comfortable in that arena.
They have. And it's kind of a bit of a nod to the coaching staff, too, because, you know, these are things that Michigan has not done well throughout much of the course of the year. And, you know, they've fixed the power or the penalty kill, it looks like. The defense has been noticeably better since, you know, that first Notre Dame series. So you're looking at, you know, 4 series ago now of pretty good defense. And when they've gotten good goaltending behind that good defense, they've just been really, really tough to beat.
Yep.
So props to the staff, props to the players for executing that too. You haven't had the goofy turnovers quite as much. And, you know, this is, as they say, this is the time of year when you want things to come together and get hot.
I can't believe I'm doing this. If you find yourself in the penalty box, you want a Michigan man arguing your case, call criminal law attorney and former prosecutor Jonathan Paul tonight. It's 248 and 924-9458. Or visit his old website at MichiganLawGrad.com.
Only one game on the weekend for Michigan. You know, we've talked about it. So now we'll transition into the usual talking other games and like our old friends and around the league. That is, or not as many of those either. So we added a few other things to this segment. You know, we'll talk about some pairwise, some conference tournament stuff around college hockey, and then we'll look at Michigan State, who Michigan will play this weekend. But first, in the scores that are relevant to Michigan, not a ton, but Providence played UMass, so two teams that, you know, we usually talk about play each other in one game, and Providence loses to UMass 3-1. That becomes relevant to Michigan. It's good for Michigan in some ways because, you know, they're going to finish out of Providence now, sort of cementing themselves probably as a 3 seed. But, you know, with UMass and then, you know, we'll get to UNO stuff later, it complicates where they can possibly go based on hosting and that sort of thing. But UMass is still alive, and we'll talk about them again in a little bit when it comes to the semifinals of the Hockey East tournament.
Providence is done.
Providence is not. They cannot make it.
Nope.
Right? In under any circumstances.
Farewell.
Friarwell. The St. Cloud Clouds beat...
They had a big weekend.
They did. They beat Western 5-2. Then they lost 6-1, and we did not know what was going to happen in game 3, and I actually did not write down that score. I
5-1.
5-1. So you have 5-2, and then -6-1, and then another positive 5-1.
Yeah,
that is 3 blowouts.
St. Cloud was fading down the stretch, and then they bounced back big time.
So they're not definitively in,
no,
though.
They are
right?
Not. They are not definitively in.
They're going to need
a huge game coming up on Friday against Denver.
Ooh.
And they need that one. They need to make a little bit of a run here. I think if they win that game, they've got a good shot. Let me look at the pairwise matrix, but let's see here.
Well, we can look at that in a second. We just have one more game to go through. While you look that up, I'll talk about Ohio State, Michigan State. So this was an interesting game. This was obviously the other Big Ten semifinal, our last game that we're really going to look at in terms of our scores. A super tight game. Michigan State gets a 1-0 lead.
It was a weird game because MSU was really stepping on their necks for the first maybe 30 minutes of that game. Remember, yeah. Logan Turnus made
three or four
fabulous saves when
in rushes, right? Like yep. breakaways.
And MSU really had a chance to bury them, and then he held them in it, and then they started to push back and played much better in the back half of that game.
Yeah, they tie it at one. They get back into it. Because when Michigan State scores, we're kind of like, well, you know, this isn't, Ohio State isn't probably going to hang around too long, and then you get to see all those chances. Turner steps up, Ohio State ties it, and then Michigan State takes the lead, but the goal's waved off for goalie interference. And I thought that one was correct. There was some contact in the crease. They get that right, so it stays 1-1. And then Brian shows up for the third period. We're watching this one, and then Michigan State scores again to go up 2-1. This is reviewed for goalie interference. This it looks like been, there is contact
yes,
again.
This should have come back.
But it does not come back because Big Ten reffing.
I was unclear about that one. The next review, which is the Ohio State tying goal.
So Ohio State then ties it at 2.
Right, then it was an MSU go ahead, right? Or was it that?
No, it was 2-1. And then Ohio State is going to ties it. And and this was getting later in the third. So it was looking like this is potentially going to be overtime. And this one was waved off for icing, I guess. Or not icing, offsides.
So what's weird about this one is whatever angle was the big one, they didn't show us, I don't think.
Like the definitive angle?
Yes.
So they were looking at it, but...
Well, because we were sitting there like, how can you tell anything?
Yeah.
And after the game, they asked Nightingale about the whole thing, and he was like, yeah, the offsides was like obvious. Like, we knew we got that one in the bag. Like, it wasn't even close.
Huh.
And some of the MSU people were tweeting the same thing. Like, that was so obvious.
It was shown at the stadium?
It might have been. I don't know.
And then not here?
Yeah, I don't know. But that one doesn't seem to be disputed in any way.
So Michigan State has the 2-1 lead in a very confusing fashion for at least the viewers at home. And they do hang on and win 2-1, so obviously they'll make the final. Michigan will be going to East Lansing. The interesting thing for me is that... The difference between these two teams didn't seem like a whole lot. I mean, you got good goaltending, but Augustine played well too. I mean, Ohio State had a few chances that he snuffed out. So it didn't feel very different for either team other than the fact that I think that, you know, you have a couple of players for Michigan State that kind of can change the game and create a goal from a lot less. But it seemed like a very even game.
Even strength possession, 64-52.
Yeah, in favor of Michigan State, I presume.
MSU was the better team.
And shots were what? They were
very close.
Pretty close, yeah.
It wasn't overwhelming, but MSU was the better team. So
yeah, and they win 2-1. So now we can transition to pairwise. You were looking up some stuff earlier, and Michigan is in mostly a pretty good spot, I think.
They're up to 10th after briefly being 11th. They're back up to 10th. And that's very, very likely to be where they end up, 83% to finish 10th.
So they can't get to 8th, right?
They cannot.
That is impossible. So they will be a 3.
They will be either 10th or 11th.
So they'll be a 3.
Yep.
And the weird thing about this 3 is it's not really about, oh, well, you know, will they match up against this team or this team? They have to play one of two teams because of the other participants.
Yes, and we can cancel any reservations in Sioux Falls.
Because UNO is also...
Omaha is 96% to be a 3.
Yeah, and they're hosting there.
Hosting Sioux Falls, so scratch that one off the list.
The other one that's interesting is Springfield. If UMass is a 3, they host that.
Yes, but they're only 21% to be a 3. They're much more likely to be a 4, which is the scenario the committee doesn't want, because that bumps.
That just sends everything into a
chaos. Yeah. Boston U would have to go to St. Louis. And this is already a fiasco anyway because of the potential seeding situation. Because right now, if the tournament started, you'd have 2 Hockey East 1s and 2 NCHC 1s. And one of the 4s would be Colorado College, which is an NCHC team.
Which means they will get either B or BC.
They have to, which then means if the tournament started today and the projection I think the committee would draw up, BU's reward for being the second overall seed would be to be sent to St. Louis instead of the regional in their backyard,
yeah,
and play CC instead of RIT.
Who is probably a lot closer to the venue.
Yeah, and also a lot better. That's the biggest thing. Yeah.
Because otherwise they would, what? They would draw probably the CCHA champion.
They'd draw RIT.
Would it be RIT or would it be...
It'd be RIT.
Or would it be Bemidji or whatever?
If there is a lot of upsets.
Yeah.
Or no, there can't be. The Atlantic Hockey's down to RIT and American. So that team will finish ahead of the CCHA team.
Okay, so they're... The Atlantic is better than the CCHA this year.
CCHA is awful.
Well, I mean, we're talking about the Atlantic, too. This isn't the COVID year when they were going to get three teams in, Alex.
Yes, but yeah, the CCHA is real, real bad.
Okay. So
the point is that this is, again, showing off all of the major issues that your reward for being a two is a harder, the number two overall seed is a worse location and a harder opponent than the team one slot below you. Because your athletic director 6 years ago did not agree to sponsor an empty rink,
which
in the recent in the area of your university,
and this just begs for you need a best of three at a home venues.
But I also think we need to repeal the rule against conference matchups in the first round of the tournament. I think it should be a guideline. I do not believe it should be the letter of the law for these reasons. I do not think that Boston U should be punished because of the way it shakes out.
I agree.
I think that we should say we will try our hardest to avoid interconference matchups, but we should reward better teams as opposed to caving to interconference matchups.
You could do a draft. You get to pick the team you want to play.
We're all in on that. So,
so right now...
Because the biggest thing with that is that... The ECAC has fallen off a lot. Like Clarkson used to be relevant. Remember them?
Oh, I do. I've seen them.
Harvard
was relevant the last couple of years.
Not now.
Clarkson used to be good, yes.
Yeah, Clarkson used to be... I mean, Yale won the national championship like 10 years ago. The other Ivies have just... They're not existent.
Yeah.
Clarkson is also...
Brian was unaware that Brown had a team.
Faded away. And so you've been left with basically QPAC. And there is nothing else in that conference. Cornell, sort of, occasionally, is on the periphery. And...
So would it be, like, justice?
And the CCHA has also fallen apart. And I don't know if they're... And honestly, when we look at these conferences, in the next 5 years, who do you expect to be seriously that's... competing for an at-large bid? I would say Harvard and QPAC in the ECAC, maybe Cornell.
Yeah.
And the CCHA Tech. Maybe Minnesota State figured it out. My point about these conferences is it's not like I don't think they're coming back. I think that they
It would take like a Mike Hastings again.
Yeah, so if we're getting into this world where in any given year 12 to 13 slots are being taken up by three conferences, it becomes increasingly hard to guarantee you don't get matchups in your own conference without disregarding pairwise altogether.
So would the best thing that happens is that that Quinnipiac loses in their conference tournament?
Yes.
And then that would sort of save
if Cornell or Dartmouth or whoever gets that, gets a slot, then that really clears it up. It's UMass they do not want in the tournament. The problem is though, at the moment it'd be Colorado College you're bumping out, but that would at least resolve the RIT issue. So
right now, what is your probable Michigan region as of right now?
The one I had drawn up last night was, let's see here, St. Louis.
Well, Maryland Heights, let's be clear. This is not where the Blues play. This is like a smaller suburb of St. Louis.
How much of a suburb is this?
Well, it's right on the Missouri. I was looking this up.
Let me pull this up.
It's like 22 miles from downtown, I think. From the Arch. I think I was looking up hotels, and the one that's really close to the rink is like 22 miles or 22 minutes, 22 miles from the Arch, which
Let's
is
see here. Maryland Heights, Missouri. Yeah, that's towards the outer area. I mean, that's by St. Charles.
It's on the Missouri.
Let's see.
I think. I was interested. Maybe there was a river park that you can go and visit, since most of these viewers are going to
23 minutes.
Trek. Yeah, that's right what
now,
I said.
If you drove right now.
fact-checking me.
Well, I didn't doubt you on the miles. The minutes are the interesting.
Well, I mean, that's
what I
that comes
about.
Down to traffic.
Because I think if we were doing Detroit comparisons,
yeah,
if the Red Wings played in Royal Oak,
sure,
I would be more comfortable calling that, you know, Detroit. When the Pistons played in Auburn Hills, that was fundamentally something else because it was way out there.
Yeah,
it was very far away.
It was over half an hour.
Yeah,
and, yeah.
So
you would get okay. So we're talking about. The St. Louis
the
suburbs.
The St. Louis metropolitan area.
Which is something that is frequently discussed in the world.
Boston U against Colorado College.
Would be the 1-4.
And Maine and Michigan would be the 2-3.
And Michigan's either going to get QPAC or
Maine.
Or Maine.
Yep.
And selfishly, I'm kind of hoping for Maine.
The Black Bears.
I mean, we just haven't seen them in a while. And they haven't been... You know, Quinnipiac, we've seen the last couple of years, and, you know, there's probably people on the team that are like, ah, I want to get those guys, or probably in that voice, too. But, you know, I don't know. Part of the fun thing that I get out of the tournament, even going back years, is you get to see teams that you don't normally see, and Maine and Michigan used to have a bit of a rivalry back in the 90s and early 2000s, but it's been a long time since Michigan has played Maine, and this is the best time to do it.
Yeah, so. I don't necessarily think there's a big difference between Maine and
you mean like
Quinnipiac.
In terms of like
team,
well, we haven't really dug into the
team quality.
Yeah. We'd have to look at why they're good. And
QPAC's got a lot of similar players to the ones they had last year, but crucially, they don't have their goalie.
Parrots.
Yep, our old friend.
Do they have their same? I mean, I don't know. This
they
is
have
next
Graf
week's.
And Quillen, I believe. Maine's big thing is they've got the Nadeau brothers, one of whom is a first-round pick.
Oh.
And they are, like, by far their leading scorers, both as freshmen.
Yeah.
The rest of the team does not seem to have a lot of oomph.
So right now, it's going to be one of those things. Michigan's going to be a 3. And what odds would you give them of going to St. Louis?
I have no idea on that part.
Okay.
That could change dramatically.
If Massachusetts wins their semifinal, they're probably a 3, I would guess, at that point. And then Michigan's down to Providence and St. Louis. And it feels like probably St. Louis. But that will remain to be seen as there are a lot of other variables and games that will take place before we do that. So this seems like a really good time to transition into looking at the conference tournaments because that will play a role in what we are just discussing.
This is a somewhat enjoyable college hockey weekend.
Yeah.
As enjoyable as college hockey can be. But.
So, Friday night, we have the Hockey East semifinals, which are Massachusetts and Boston College and Maine and BU. And those are, like, what, 4 of the top 5?
Those are really good matchups. I will have to thoroughly cleanse myself to agree to watch Hockey East hockey as a anti-East Coast college hockey elite person.
I think those are okay. That's a lot in that, but
I'm a Big Ten and NCHC supremacist.
I see.
So I don't tolerate the
you
Massachusetts
refuse
people.
To watch any. All right. So then they will play in the finals on Saturday. It kind of feels like, well, 3 of those teams are definitively in. Well, all 4 of them are probably definitively in, and 3 of them are going to be 1s and 2 seeds. I think.
Yep.
Pretty.
These are all chalk in this tournament,
which should be. Good games there. The ECAC semifinals are St. Lawrence and Quinnipiac, Dartmouth and Cornell, and basically it's Quinnipiac versus the field.
If you are seen watching Dartmouth and Cornell, there will be social consequences.
Tar and feathering? In the NCHC, you have North Dakota and Omaha, Uno, and Denver and St. Cloud. And this is where it gets a little more interesting because you have Nodak and Denver that are probable ones. I think Denver could slip.
Yes. So
if
Michigan
they lose.
State has a lot at stake in the Michigan game because they need to beat Michigan to move up.
But if Denver wins and beats St. Cloud, would they also then probably have to win their conference? Or do you think that one win will secure their one seed and then therefore the other than hanging a banner and beating their rival, Michigan State will be locked into what they have as a high 2?
So Michigan State's got a 60% chance to beat Michigan in the K-Ratch, right? That is what fuels the matrix.
Okay.
They have 55% chance to get up to 1. So to me, that suggests in most circumstances, if they beat Michigan, they move up. regardless of what
regardless of what Denver does.
But because it's not exact probabilities, there is a scenario, I guess, where Denver and Nodak could stay there even if MSU wins. So I don't know exact contingencies, but
either way, and those games, I believe, are on CBS College Sports
Network.
Yes, an actual television station, as it might be.
The big loser of last weekend was Colorado College. They won the first game and then gacked the next two at home. And so they're the team that is watching these games and sweating profusely because...
Rooting for Quinnipiac.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because they do not want a bid stealer. They also don't want St. Cloud.
Well, okay.
They need Denver to beat St. Cloud, and they need QPAC to win the ECAC. And if those two things happen, then they're in. But
I see.
If they don't, then they're in some trouble. Other note there, I believe I saw this from the dude who covers Nodak, that this is Omaha's first ever appearance in the Frozen Faceoff.
Oh,
in the NCHC?
At St. Paul? In St. Paul?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Which
well,
is kind of crazy, but...
Yeah, I mean, usually those teams... you've had Denver and North Dakota and, you know, Duluth usually there most years, and
what
so,
happened to Duluth?
Well, they might have fallen into Lake Superior. And then the last tournament, aside from obviously the Big Ten Final, which we will talk about in a second, is Michigan Tech at Bemidji State.
What about Atlantic Hockey?
Did I skip? Oh, the Atlantic Hockey Final is Saturday. Yes.
Those
All right,
two are both finals. They are both.
So Michigan Tech, Bemidji, I don't have a... You think Tech is better? It's at Bemidji State. Bemidji won the... they won the CCHA.
Bemidji, I think, is higher in pairwise. I don't know what the K-Ratch is.
Well...
It's 31 versus 35. Bemidji's higher
so
in pairwise.
Yeah, so neither one is...
I know who I'm cheering for.
Yeah? Who are you cheering
that
for?
That doesn't need to be stated.
Is it the opposite of your nemesis? Personal nemesis? And then, as you alluded to, we have the Atlantic Final, which will be on... Was that Saturday? Yeah, American International, who Michigan played in the tournament 2 years ago in Allentown.
2 years ago,
and RIT.
Yeah, these are the usual suspects.
Yeah.
in the Atlantic Hockey. No Canisius miracle run like last year.
Oh well, or Niagara Purple Eagles.
Yep, and both of these teams, as we mentioned, are higher in pairwise than the CCHA teams.
Hmm.
So no intrigue there.
All right, so that leaves one last game to discuss, and it is Michigan and Michigan State in the Big Ten Final. It will be in East Lansing because Michigan State won the regular season and then won their semifinal game against Ohio State, as we previously said. This game will be at 8 p.m. on Saturday night on regular BTN. And, you know, State, we haven't seen now in about a month or so. Where the since we played them at the Joe, they're fifth in pairwise with a chance to be a one seed. So if that would happen, they would probably go to St. Louis, I would guess, and then we might actually be there with State.
It could.
they're 10th in Corsi, so they do have a lot of possession and take a lot of attempts. 27% on the power play, pretty good, and 81% on the penalty kill, also very good. They have 5+1 drafted skaters. So they have 5 drafted skaters plus Levshinov, who is going to probably be, a top 5 pick?
Somewhere in that range, probably.
And they have high-end guys. They have Isaac Howard's a first-rounder, and they have a couple of seconds. The other defenseman, Sturback.
Maxim Sturback.
For Buffalo took him, I believe, if I remember correctly. And then... So they have a couple high-enders plus a guy who's going to go in this summer's draft. They only have 5 skaters that are scoring over .75
points per game. They have a really deep offense. That's been their thing all year. They have nobody above 15 goals, which is a little unusual for a team that is a high-scoring offensive team. But what they do have is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 guys scoring at least 7 goals. And this is in a 35-game sample. So you're talking about if an NHL team had 17 goal scorers. That's a lot.
This is sort of like the Blues a couple of years ago, who had all those 20 goal scorers.
Yeah, that kind of thing. So they come at you with a lot of lines. They play really aggressively in an offensive manner. We saw this in the matchups with them. They've always got a guy in their own defensive zone hanging around near the blue line, ready to bust out
Pavel Bure
and ready for a breakaway. Michigan's got to be ready for that kind of stuff. They've got to be careful with their play high in the offensive zone. But MSU does give up a lot of shots. That's been a thing of theirs all season long, and it hasn't necessarily mattered.
Well, they have Trey Augustine, which is the last part of that that is really there to discuss in terms from a number standpoint.
Here
he has
the
286 and a 919 save percentage, which is, and we've seen him. He's played real, other than the first game, he's played very well against Michigan.
They have given up the sixth most shots against per game in the NCAA this season.
That's high.
Do you want to guess the five teams that gave up more shots?
Oh boy. Have I heard of all of them?
Yeah.
Has Michigan played any of them?
They have.
Is it Stonehill?
Stonehill is one of them.
Is it Long Island?
No, it's not Long
it's
Island.
It's Long. Good for them. Is it Lindenwood?
Lindenwood is two.
They're also up there?
Yep.
What conference are the other ones in?
One is sort of independent. One is Atlantic Hockey, and one is...
Independent. Is it Alaska Anchorage?
No.
Oh.
You should know this one.
I should know this one?
Yes.
The independent one?
Yes.
Arizona State?
No.
Not Alaska?
Nope.
I've named, like, all the independents.
You can't not get this one. There's a reason why I said they're kind of independent.
But they're not independent. Oh, Augustana?
Augustana,
yes.
They're listed as an NCHC team, but they're not allowed to play.
CCHA.
Whatever it is, whatever conference
well,
they're in.
Big difference, but... Yeah, but they're not allowed... But they're
not in the standings.
They're in the standings. They're just their numbers don't count.
Yeah,
right?
It's a bizarre.
Yeah. They have to pay their dues, I guess.
So the last two are both Atlantic Hockey.
Okay, and they are
Bobby Moe
and
Mercyhurst.
No West.
Yep, Robert Morris and Mercyhurst.
Yep. So
they give up a lot of shots.
Yeah,
and
Michigan will take shots.
Yep, and Trey Augustine at a 919. He's been pretty good.
Yep.
So we'll see what kind of performance he can put up.
The other thing that they've done well is I think that their staff has improved their play against Michigan over the times that they've played. I thought that their games got progressively better from the 7-1 shellacking they took in at Munn to, you know, Michigan was pushing them around before they gave away that Saturday game, but they bounced back in it. And then the game they played Michigan kind of 50-50 at Yost in February and ended up winning after a couple of Michigan giveaways in their own end late. And then the last game, I thought they were probably the better team at Joe Louis.
Yeah.
So, you know, that we've seen Michigan do that to other teams in the past, improve in that way, and Michigan State is doing that to them. But this one is for all the marbles. I know that, you know, Michigan has this game circled. I think that they want another shot at State. I think State certainly has this. They want to hang a banner, and they probably want to beat Michigan. So this should be a pretty fun, feisty game, I expect.
What was the last biggest Michigan State hockey game?
Holy cow.
Is it the whatever that was called, the Big Chill?
Was that a big game? I mean, it was
an outdoor game, at least.
I mean, I don't think... State wasn't very good, though. I mean, Michigan kind of trounced them in that game.
They really
trounced them. It was like 5-0, wasn't it?
Yes.
This is the biggest Michigan State game in...
I don't have an answer for you because this is long, long before.
Probably 2007 or 8. I mean, State won a national title in 07, and then in 08, I don't think that they were...
It's going to be a raucous environment. I was looking at the tickets. They're going for $400, $500, $600.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Munn isn't massive either.
No.
So.
There's one seat at center ice in the lower bowl on StubHub for $1,500.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
You pay $1,500 to see a college hockey game, you should wear a bag on your head to go to the game.
Who are you a fan of? Is your team bad? No, I just don't spend my money in the right places. Well, I think that's it for our preview of Michigan State. It should be a fun game, 8 o'clock.
We do have BTN. To get one thing on here. We didn't mention this last week,
okay.
But we didn't see the big Lindenwood news.
Oh, is there bigger? Oh.
Their coach has been fired.
Zombo?
Rick Zombo, the niche Detroit Red Wings of the 1980s,
well, people
has
thought,
been relieved of his duties.
People thought he was kind of going to be a big deal, right? Because he has NHL connections,
yep.
And it's an up-and-coming program, and now it looks like they're going to have to go in a different direction.
Yep.
So too bad for Lindenwood.
Yep.
And Zombo, I guess. Maybe good for Lindenwood.
Good for Lindenwood.
If it wasn't going. But anyway. All right, 8 p.m. BTN, Saturday night. be there.
Listen to Michigan Hockey Cast 6.20 for Alex Drain and David Nasternak. Next week will be the full NCAA tournament preview week.